We're speaking now with Allie Baranski, and she is the executive director of the festival at Sandpoint. Allie, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Well, the summer season closed out just last Sunday, the 11th, and the festival had 9 concerts this year. So, Allie, in a nutshell, how did the season go?
I mean, really well, all things considered. Every year, the nature of a pop-up venue always has its hiccups and headaches, but overall, it was a really great season. The community feedback was great, and we also received a lot of first-timer feedback this year, which is always fun. But yeah, all in all, it was a good season.
So, Allie, another question kind of on that. Are there numbers yet available for attendance for any certain concerts that stand out with attendance? And how did the season compare to previous seasons?
Yeah, we had really strong ticket sales this year. We were a little worried for a while as we tracked our sales. However, we had a really great July. When it came to ticket sales, our July sales barely brought us kind of into almost first place in our historic revenue, but we are still, our finals are not yet confirmed due to the Gavin DeGraw cancellation. We opened up refunds through the end of yesterday. So those are now closed. So soon I'll be able to have a better idea of where we ended up. Unfortunately, those refunds are probably going to push us a little bit. But overall, really, really kind of strong sales across the board. And we also had a record-breaking ticket sales for our grand finale, How to Train Your Dragon, in concert.
Okay, so the biggest shows were, I presume, well, you tell us, what were the biggest shows?
Lee Brice was our second biggest. We were just 184 tickets shy of a sellout, so that we were really close. But our biggest show was Jason Mraz, as we kind of anticipated. It sold out a few weeks prior, and I think for good reason. It was an amazing show.
Absolutely. Jason Mraz knocked everybody's socks off. And he was so personable with the audience and brought he even opened the whole show for even the first act. What a performer. So which shows well, you just said which shows were the biggest, and the feedback that you got from people, how do you gather feedback, by the way, just out of curiosity?
It's all over the place. It's whether some people call, some people email, so a lot of it's social media, and then a lot of it is just people see me on the field and give me feedback, good or bad. But our board members also receive a lot of feedback as kind of ambassadors for our organization. So it comes through a lot of different forms. But the most popular is probably just verbal on site as well as social media.
Yeah, and just watching the crowd and how excited they were for some of those bigger shows, also gives you feedback, just,
Correct.
the
Yes.
response on the
Watching
field,
people
exactly.
belting the songs and knowing every word and bringing signs and yeah, definitely just the overall feeling of the concert and the crowd as well is good feedback.
Was there a show that you'd consider was a sleeper show, maybe one of the acts that wasn't that well known but got a big reception?
I think that would be answered differently depending on who you ask. So from like my perspective, the more sleeper shows of the season would probably be Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors with the National Parks, even Trombone Shorty and Big Boy, and maybe even Maren Morris. I think just considering I look at it as like quality of show and people's responses versus the amount of tickets sold, that kind of correlation. The only reason I put Maren Morris into the category is probably just due to like it was just a very high quality production, the sound mixing. It was probably one of the best I've witnessed in a very long time. Just the overall level of production that they brought and professionalism and overall quality that kind of blew us away with on the staff.
I got a second, on Drew Holcomb and the National Parks. I didn't hear Maren Morris, but That was the one that was like, hey, haven't heard of this guy, but it's excellent. And the, you know, the opening act, National Parks, was really excellent too. So that's one thing about the
and so
festival.
Personable too.
Yeah, really, really. Those guys are really high energy. That's one thing about the festival is I've discovered over the years is that you discover these acts you never heard of, and they kind of blow you away, and they, you know, open up your musical horizons, if you will.
Good. I love hearing that.
So I spend every day from noon to two at the front gate as an ambassador, and I talk to a lot of people, and I also did my own little survey. And Drew Holcomb and the National Park and that whole evening event was what I kept hearing people say. They were just so surprised and loved it. So I think that's a common theme on that one. And yeah, really. And also, I also noticed, because I'm standing there watching what's going on the field, it's a really big production that you guys put on. There's so many moving parts, which is to say there's a lot of opportunity for things to go wrong. But I was personally just impressed with how much you have to consider, right down to the weather. But did you experience any big snafus? Did anything occur that kind of y'all had to get on board with, and all hands on deck kind of thing?
Yes. Every year there are. I joke that, you know, when we're a pop-up venue, everything from Sharpies to paper clips to refrigeration to ice, to every detail has to be moved in and thought about ahead of time before we even get on the field. So the preparation and the amount of details is kind of overwhelming at times. And when that happens and we have such a small window to set up, there's great room for error. And every year there are always hiccups. It's just, you know, how we react to them. So we did have a very rough load-in for our production crew. The load-in is essentially those, you know, 6-7 days that we build out an entire venue, build out backstage, dressing rooms, etc. But it all started, I actually was on KRFY saying things were going super well, and I think I jinxed us due to the Microsoft outage. Was kind of what started it. The stage tech's flight was delayed several hours, meaning our stage setup was delayed several hours. And really, every hour counts after we take the field, and we cannot start any of the entirety of backstage setup until that stage is set. So this kind of kicked off a series of unfortunate events that occurred during setup this year. I always tell our crew, you never know when we're going to be behind. So like, just pretend like we're always behind. Do things early. If you have time to do it, because we don't know where we'll be on opening day. The extreme heat during load-in meant that we were ending days early, as the heat, especially on that artificial turf, it became not safe for crews to be working in the afternoons. So we had to shift our entire load-in schedule. Some crews came in early, some crews came late. And then we also had, unfortunately, injuries and some major health concerns not related to setup that left us without our two key seasonal staff members for the majority of their supervisory roles on the field. That was the biggest and hardest part of this setup, is we essentially didn't have the people who were in charge of setting up the field. So it was one of the hardest setups we've experienced in recent years. However, I think with that, I found myself, especially the night getting home at like 1 a.m., the night of Blues Traveler opening day, I've never been more proud of anything in my life, I think, than set up for this year. Our year-round staff, we all have duties on the field, but they really jumped in to assist beyond their general setup duties. We worked very long hours. It was a lot of manual labor, and somehow we got it all done. I know, it's just, for a lot of us, just the end of that opening night, we were all just so grateful for every single person, and that the staff that kind of chipped in and arrived early and stayed late, and really the people that make up our production team and our year-round staff, I think are just superhuman. And I cannot be more grateful or be any luckier to have them all on the team. It just felt like we had the right people at the right time to pull it off. I think if it had been any year prior with less staff, I don't know if we could have done it. So it was hard, but like silver lining, I was so grateful and proud at the end of the day that our team was able to do it.
It's that show must go on spirit.
It is.
Yeah. Well, so that's on the snafu side. Of course, you mentioned the weather was super hot to start with. And then towards the end, on the very last day, we had that rain in the morning for the last show on Sunday. But then it cleared off. It was like gorgeous for the show itself. So that, you know, the weather's always an influence. What you might consider some of the biggest or most standout moments of the season, at least for you, Allie?
Well, there's good and bad. I think one thing that I didn't mention in the hiccups was the cancellation of Gavin DeGraw.
Yeah.
That was a pretty standout moment for this season, and also a pretty big hiccup, both in terms of just disappointment to our fans, but also financially, and just it was another kind of stressor late night, early morning of the staff having to put plans into place. We knew Gavin had been sick, though, a few days before because he had canceled his weekend prior to us. But we were given notice a few days prior that he was feeling better and he was going to perform the weekend. However, being in the event planning world, our team did sit down and come up with three scenarios of what could happen prior to knowing if he was coming. And we had three scenarios, and unfortunately the least favorable scenario happened was he thinks he's going to do it, but then last minute he can't. And unfortunately that is what happened. So I actually found out at the same time as the rest of the world. I think I found out 2 minutes before he posted on social media, but the moment that Jason Mraz concert started is when we found out as staff. And so unfortunately I didn't get to see Jason Mraz's concert, but we kind of went into crisis mode and to help start figuring it all out. And we're trying to get a bigger kind of co-headliner name, but we're really happy that, you know, just with less than 24 hours and with having a band needing to load in the next morning, we were really happy to be able to finally get Sydney Dale on our big stage. We've worked with her a few times, so that was very exciting. But overall, just kind of standout moments would probably be just Blues Traveler getting on stage that opening day for us, for Loden. I know Big Boy with Trombone Shorty was a pretty big standout show. I don't think I've ever seen that big or enthusiastic of a crowd during an opener, rapping every word of every song, and just hearing all of the reactions at the end of the night about both acts was pretty amazing. And then the grand finale. The grand finale was really special, both for, I think, just the festival as a whole. I think last year people realized what a movie in concert was, and it was just very family friendly. We're lucky to have the Novia Foundation underwrite and help sponsor a free face painting. So I think that was a really big highlight for us as well. That was by far the most people we've ever had at a grand finale, and it was just, there were so many families, and it was so special.
It sounds like it was very magical, and as you said, special. One of the things I just want to back up for a minute, and when you're looking at some of the highlights, and you just said it, I think that I noticed that your staff that was walking around on the field had the best attitudes, were very friendly, and super helpful. So, again, your staff really stands out as awesome, and they get a round of applause for the work they do. And you too, Allie.
Thank you. I've always said our staff is made up of people that when a crisis happens, you would never know. They all stay extremely calm and just focus on how to solve the problem. And that's, you know, really what's key in large events. It's not what happens to you, it's how you react to it. And they are all just the picture perfect example of that. Like Paul Gunter, I joke, like, not only are we in crisis, but he's still funny. Like, that's the part that, like, I know I can get quieter or serious, but like, he still has time to make jokes. And I just applaud all of them for their ability to stay extremely positive and kind.
Yeah, sense of humor helps, huh? And I'm going to echo you on that finale where the Festival at Sandpoint Orchestra was playing in accompaniment to the movie How to Train Your Dragon. It's just so cool to be watching that movie, and then always you kind of get wrapped in the movie, and then you realize, hey, there's live orchestra that's playing all this gorgeous music, and so you're toggling back and forth, you know, watching the movie, watching the orchestra. And one of the things that really stood out this year was there were a lot of families there. There was just a ton of kids at this year's show, and just so much fun have those kids bouncing around.
Yeah, and it was a hard score too. So like, even the what they were playing was extremely challenging, and there were 73 of them. So that was our largest symphony in history. We had kind of put them out on our little side stages, but we were able to fit them all in. I'm just so grateful the rain stopped when it did. That also added a hiccup of, you know, setting up was hard that day because we have to reconfigure a lot of things for the grand finale, and we had to kind of wait and protect things and then get things out and dry things off. So that added just a nice finale of stress as well, but we could not have, the priority is that the fans have great weather. And so we could not have been any luckier when it came to that this year.
Yeah, the rain stopped just in time, you know, an hour or two before the show began. And you also had the Taste of the Stars there that night and the face painting for the kids.
Correct.
It was just a totally fun afternoon.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and the accidental serenaded Taste of the Stars, which I know Susie's a big fan of, so I wanted to mention them again.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right. I was going to if you hadn't. So.
So do you want to mention
the accidentals?
The accidentals.
Go ahead.
Allie, would you like to mention any of the sponsors and how did the artwork auction go?
Yeah. The artwork auction did fairly well. This year we split proceeds with Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. So that was kind of a fun added feel good part of that auction. And that concluded at the end of the grand finale. We were able to, I am also grateful that we were able to add two local openers this year. We rarely get to do that, Justin Priest and Sydney Dale. And then just at the end of every season, I'm just really grateful and blown away by the amount of people and their generosity, whether it's financially or donating their time. We had over 600 volunteers donate over 10,000 hours. And that just, those numbers are crazy when we're considering 9 shows. And then just our sponsors, they keep rising to the occasion. Our costs keep increasing, but so do they. We broke another record for donations this year. But just to quickly mention our major sponsors, Idaho Forest Group, Toyota, STCU, the Inovia Foundation, and Tito's Handmade Vodka are some of the big ones that help make it all happen.
And the artist this year was Daniel Gill with the Fine Arts poster. And
correct.
You mentioned that you split that with the Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. And the artwork itself is this iconic, really beautifully rendered illustration of a mountain goat up on Scotchman's Peak looking down on the lake and towards the festival. So that was really cool, too. So, next year's festival dates are already set, July 24th to August 3rd, 2025. between now and then, you have a lot of education and outreach programs that some people may not even be aware of. Do you, any of those that you'd like to mention?
Sure. Yes, we love our education programs. We keep adding more, but we have our pre-K outreach program where actually Paul Gunter himself goes to a handful of early childhood development schools locally and teaches rhythms and instruments. I think my kids were both able to participate a little bit, and they probably know about more instruments than I do. We have our instrument library where we have over 100 instruments that people can check out. It's completely free. There's just a deposit to make sure that we get that instrument back. We do give priority to students, but adults can check them out as well. Those go for the school year, and then we also have a summer season for checkout. We have our scholarships that we give out every year, about $10,000 to a handful of students. We have our free youth orchestra that is, over 20 years old. That's completely free, where you get to learn how to play an orchestra, and it's all levels. We have our summer internships, which are some of my favorite, where we get, local teenagers and college students that get to get real hands-on experience in the music industry. We then have our elementary outreach, as well as concerts that we do year-round. And now we have our festival at Sandpoint Orchestra. So some of even our own students or even scholarship winners have been able to professionally perform with our orchestra each year and get a professional paycheck. And that's super fun to see that come full circle as well.
Excellent work there on the educational part of the festival at Sandpoint. And just moving ahead a little bit, most people probably don't understand or know or can even imagine what it takes to put together musical acts for a 2-week concert series. So maybe you could give us a little picture of and when you will start shaping that up for next year. But what does it take to put that together every year? And timeline.
How much time do you have, Susie? we've already started. So I start offering in June for the following year. Sometimes I'm already getting requests for 2026, and that's just a little too far for my brain right now. But booking starts pretty early on, over a year out. And so honestly, that's July is the hardest for me because I'm doing both. Trying to figure out how to, continue to focus on what needs to happen this year to put a festival on versus, but I need to be putting out offers for next year. So that's honestly what I do for most of August is really buckle down on procuring acts. For us, it's harder just due to our location and due to our limited dates. Most booking, if we had a, permanent venue, we would give our dates from May to September. And depending on how their tour shifted and the routing moved around, we would have more options for them. So because we have such limited dates, we probably do, compared to our sister venue, we do about 10 times more the offers because of those dates. The amount of times that I've had people say, oh, what about 2 weeks earlier? And I go, nope, we don't have a venue then. So that's a big part of it. We fundraise. We do a lot of our, nonprofit stuff and our education stuff. But we start, procuring vendors. We do our application process with the city. There's just a lot of things that go into it, but a lot of it is around when we actually book an artist, when we're allowed to announce them, and then that whole process. There's deal points that we kind of negotiate before announcing. There's deal points we negotiate after announcing. And then we're probably in contact with the tour manager of each band, so opener and headliner, anywhere between 10 and 20 times, just figuring out schedules and how many people are eating and what time, how long they're playing for. And so there's a lot of details. I joke at times that our job is like death by a million paper cuts. There's just so many minute things that you have to plan for, especially just because everything's popped up. So you can't just pivot when you don't have a true office on site, or things at our fingertips, even just, you know, what artists want, we have to let them know, well, if you want a specialty beverage, that could be a 3-hour round trip to Spokane to find it. So we have to know ahead of time, because there's no just, you know, swinging down to Spokane to figure that out day of. But yeah,
a lot of logistics.
yeah,
many details, huh? Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. you have your work cut out for you between now and July 24th of 2025, when that next show comes along. And Ali Baranski, again, Executive Director of the Festival at Sandpoint, we're out of time, but any last thing you'd like to add in here?
I'm just, honestly, at this point in the season, I'm just tired and grateful. The community's ownership of this event is really remarkable. I know when I have family from out of town come visit, it's a different kind of event, and it's purely due to the community and their generosity, whether it's time or finances, or just the enthusiasm of going to every single show. But yeah, I think at this point in the year, we're just so grateful for our supporters, our donors, and our volunteers who help make it all happen.
Well, Ali Baranski, thank you again for taking time to talk with us. And I'm sure we'll be swinging back to you again some months out when the festival for 2025 starts shaping up.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.